Case number 12-7090, Stephen Ifeanyi Amobi et al. Appellants v. District of Columbia Department of Corrections et al. Mr. Hannon for appellants, Mr. Love for appellees.
Good morning. May I, as a vehicle for deciding this case, commend to the court the letter of former Chief Judge Legg dated October 19th of 2010 that was sent to counsel in which Judge Legg posed three questions. This letter was sent immediately after the oral argument that he held on the motion for summary judgment, which was inconveniently interrupted by a fire alarm after I had completed my argument, but the district had not had an opportunity to complete its. He asked counsel to address these three issues, and we did in the record. The first is whether Director Brown or any other employee withheld exculpatory evidence from the arresting officer or otherwise improperly influenced him. The second is whether the Department of Corrections, a Department of Corrections employee, specifically it would have been Investigator Valerie Beard, fabricated the inmate interview report, and whether OIG counsel Rapunzel Johnson relied upon the inmate interview report at the arbitration knowing it had been fabricated. And the third issue he poses is whether Director Brown or another Department of Corrections employee improperly influenced the hearing officer. Now, the answers to both sides are in the record, as well as my argument. The transcript is in the record, and I won't repeat it here, but what Judge Legg did was focus on the issues which, if there were evidence on the plaintiff's side supporting an adverse inference on any of those questions, the case should have gone to the jury. And Judge Motz, later on when he received this case and decided it in a few weeks, had this record before him. And it's unclear to me why Judge Motz made the errors that he did based upon this information being in the record. First, he said that the complaint is adequate because the Metropolitan Police Department should have been a defendant in the case. Well, in the discussion with Judge Legg, it's clear that's an interest of his. The count in the case that's relevant to this is the 1985 conspiracy count, which specifically said that the District of Columbia, the named defendants, and the Metropolitan Police Department and other District of Columbia employees conspired to obstruct and rig the administrative process for firing Corporal Amobi and then subsequently the arbitration and subsequently the criminal case. It's not a conspiracy that's unknown to the history of our country. In this case, it's applied to a government employee who was subject to a person, that is the District of Columbia and its employees, conspiring to rig and defeat the procedures, the laws that were in place that should have protected him. Judge Motz went on to say that Brown was within his authority to remand, but he shouldn't have pressured the hearing officer. That seems to me to be an admission that there is a factual dispute on that. And as you would note in our pleadings, we talked about the fact that she was tearful in the arbitration proceeding when she talked about Michelle ordering her to change her decision. Judge Motz claimed that we never alleged that there was personal malice or intent to discriminate, yet that's stated specifically in both of our 1982-85 counts and our conspiracy count. In footnote 5, he seems to blame the hearing officer for this whole process, saying if the hearing officer had enough spine to resist Director Brown, then this case wouldn't be here. Well, she didn't have enough spine to resist him because she was in his line of authority, and she was an at-will employee, and she was not disinterested and outside his line of authority as the D.C. employment regulations require. It's also interesting that Judge Motz found it very difficult to even call this interview a fabricated interview. There isn't any question that Valerie Beard, a deputized United States Marshal who is an investigator and a law enforcement officer, and Wanda Patton, her boss, completely fabricated this interview. This interview was known to the District of Columbia to the Department of Corrections. It was known to Ms. Johnson at the time of the arbitration. The assertion that there was this interview and that the alleged victim wanted to press criminal charges and said that Amobi struck him first was asserted in the arbitration proceeding. The memorandum of Ms. Johnson to her boss the day before the arbitration did not appear until discovery in this case. So what we know is that she told her boss the day before the hearing that there is this fabricated memorandum, we're going to lose this hearing, and yet her boss told her to go forward with this hearing. And subsequently, or previously, when Mr. Amobi had been acquitted on a self-defense claim, the director of the Department of Corrections nevertheless pushed the U.S. Attorney's Office to continue with this case, even though the Department of Corrections' own regulations say that an officer may act in self-defense, just as the D.C. Code says that a civilian may act in self-defense. What we know is the following, that I asserted in a SIR reply and in argument before Judge Legg when he asked about this, I proffered what I believe this court may be able to take judicial notice of. A Metropolitan Police Department officer, no law enforcement officer, may arrest an individual on a misdemeanor without a warrant, except under circumstances that didn't exist here. If that had been complied with by the officer who went to the Department of Corrections and the officers of the Department of Corrections who are also law enforcement officers, and Beard and Patton, then we know that the only remedy would have been to go to the U.S. Attorney's Office through the Metropolitan Police Department to bring a complaint to their attention. I think the court can take judicial notice of that. Or you can swear me as a former assistant U.S. attorney. But there is no challenge to that assertion in the record that that's what would have happened. But I don't think it's necessary for me to prove that the District of Columbia, that the Department of Corrections tried to adversely influence the U.S. Attorney's Office. What we know is that Wanda Patton and Valerie Beard were the liaison with the U.S. Attorney's Office, and they didn't give the U.S. Attorney's Office this interview because it was fabricated. It was not given to Mr. Amobi's defense lawyers in the case, even though the witness testified. It's clear Brady material. This is not a Brady case, because Mr. Amobi was acquitted. But I would suggest to the court, when the Department of Corrections is so anxious to get rid of this man that it fabricates an interview to support his removal and then recognizes the danger of having that surface and doesn't disclose it to the U.S. Attorney's Office, who is prosecuting the case, we have reached way beyond the outer bounds of zealousness. Judge Motz suggested that Director Brown was within his rights to be concerned that what was reported to him about Corporal Amobi may have been a violation of the way he wanted his jail to be operated. The Department of Corrections has a regulation that says if an officer acts in self-defense, that's perfectly acceptable. What happened here is when the police officer arrived, he went to a conference room. Patton, Beasley, and the three white shirts, the supervisors, assembled there, and they gave the reports that they wanted the police officer to receive. The blue shirts, who had written reports, Taylor, Williams, Wilson, I believe, which completely exonerated Corporal Amobi, those reports were not presented to the officer. And the officer, who is a co-conspirator in this case, said he didn't know he couldn't arrest Corporal Amobi, but the training officer for the Metropolitan Police Department who came said that, yeah, he's not allowed to arrest him, and we've taught him not to arrest him. A couple points on the statute of limitations. The complaint in Superior Court was filed 1 year to the day after Officer Amobi's acquittal in the criminal case. Malicious prosecution has a one-year statute of limitations that begins to run at the time that the proceeding is resolved in favor of the plaintiff. With respect to false arrest, we alleged that there was concealment of the truth that would have indicated that he was falsely arrested, specifically with respect to the suppression of the fabricated interview, the report of which did form a basis of the removal. The substance of the interview was included by Deputy Britton on July 12th, same day it was fabricated, and presented to Director Brown for his decision. She said there that the prisoner was interviewed, and he said, supposedly in this interview, that Amobi struck him first, which we know is a complete fabrication. The statute of limitations we alleged had been told, and that's an issue for the jury. And Judge Motz didn't address that at all, and my time is up.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Richard Love for the District of Columbia defendants. The Amobis failed to identify the specific evidence that supports as to each defendant each of the varied claims that they have brought, and their arguments are based on misplaced case authority and factual assertions that the record simply doesn't support. I would like to just identify a few of those. With regard to this alleged statement that was suppressed, all the record shows is a notation that inmate Brown was interviewed, but it played absolutely no role in the arrest. The substance of that statement was neither reported nor communicated to the Metropolitan Police Department. And there's no evidence that the defendants knew, and by defendants, I mean Clay, Waldron, White, and Director Brown. There's no evidence in the record that they knew there was no interview, even if there was no interview, which is a disputed fact. MPD Officer Henley testified that no one asked him to arrest Officer Amobi. And all of the District of Columbia Department of Correction officials who were deposed testified that they neither heard nor knew of anyone who directed or lobbied for Officer Amobi's arrest. The Metropolitan Police Department were informed by both Warden Clay and Major White's report that Officer Amobi alleged that inmate Brown struck him first. Now, Clay's report did say that was not true, but there's no dispute that Warden Clay didn't observe inmate Brown strike Officer Amobi. Thus, Warden Clay had a good reason to report as untrue Officer Amobi's statement. And there's simply no evidence from which to infer that Clay's statement was made with conscious indifference or reckless disregard to the truth. All of the defendants here reported that they didn't observe or hear anything that would have provoked or justified the actions they observed Officer Amobi take. In fact, Deputy Waldron was asked what he observed was a self-defense tactic, and he said no. And moreover, at least 15 seconds passed, during which time all three of these officials observed inmate Brown in the corner of that sally port before they observed Officer Amobi lunge into their view and grab inmate Brown about the neck. There's no evidence that the blue shirts report, and really there's only Officer Wallace's report that's arguably material here, or any other information was withheld from the Metropolitan Police Department. In fact, Officer Wallace testified he didn't speak to the three officials when they were in the cell block where this incident occurred. He wrote his report. He gave it to his supervisor. So I think that the basis of much of the Amobi's briefs and arguments before this court is not factually supported. And we have scrutinized the record, and I think pointed specifically to it throughout our brief to provide support for the decision of Judge Motz, which we would ask this court to affirm.
And what about Judge Motz's thought that the hearing officer had been pressured to change her mind? Didn't he?
Yeah. I think, as we argued, that's largely irrelevant in terms of pre-termination process. The requirements of pre-termination process were satisfied here because he was given notice of the charges, an explanation of the charges and the evidence, and he was given an opportunity to present his side to the decision maker, which was Director Brown.
Decision maker who? Oh, that's assuming that Brown is the ultimate decision maker.
Well, I think she acknowledges that in the notice that was provided to him, Officer Amobi, that is, it says he had a right to go to a hearing officer who would make a recommendation.
So you think that even if the jury concluded that he had required her to change her position, that it wouldn't be a problem?
Well, I don't think it would be a problem, both legally, as I said, because of what the very informal requirements for pre-termination process has set forth in Loudermill. But I also take exception to the argument that this shows some impartiality or bias. I think what it shows is that Director Brown didn't believe that Officer Amobi was acting in self-defense. What it shows is, and I think as his final decision reflects, he believed that the evidence unquestionably demonstrated that Officer Amobi assaulted inmate Brown. And if you look at the record, if you look at the Ms. Nguyen's original recommendation, as Judge Mott said, it's conclusory. It's quite sparse. And if you look at the memo remanding it to Ms. Nguyen, it's reasonable. I mean, it raises questions that I think were reasonably drawn from the conclusory nature of that sparse document. And I think Judge Motz also recognized that there's nothing in there that indicates some bias or impartiality, that he was acting reasonably. And it's uncontested, I mean, at least as a matter of law, that Director Brown had the authority to remand to the hearing officer. And I think if you look at the arbitration decision on the public appendix at page 24, it cites to the authority of the director to remand this issue to the hearing officer. In fact, he had the authority to simply order a new hearing de novo before a new hearing officer. So I don't think that there is any pre-termination process claim that the district court erred in granting summary judgment for. There's nothing else. We would ask that the decision be affirmed.
I would like to ask you about the malicious prosecution issue here. You have said you've talked about the record with respect to the pre-termination decision. What's not clear to me is what supported the continuation of this case, not just that he was arrested, but that it went on after it appears. Right. There was at least some questioning at the arbitration about the validity of this document.
Again, I don't think this document played any role whatsoever in the prosecution. I mean, the dispute is as to whether or not inmate Brown gave a statement at the time or of the incident prior to Officer Amobi's arrest to the internal affairs personnel of the Department of Corrections. But that played no role in his arrest, because, as I said, the substance of the statement was never communicated, and it played no role in his prosecution. I think his prosecution was based on the observations of the three officials who observed him lunge at and assault inmate Brown. And if I can remind the court, inmate Brown did testify at his criminal proceeding. And so whether he made a statement at the time of his arrest, I mean, it's inconsequential, it's irrelevant. I mean, they could have asked him if they wanted to explore that issue at the criminal trial. It had some relevance. They were free to do so.
And what I'm trying to understand is the chronology of this, because fine if they weren't sure what they saw and they said, truthfully what they thought they saw. But at some point before this went to trial, didn't somebody look at the evidence from the other side, the the statements that were made by other people who witnessed it from a different perspective?
Yeah. Well, obviously, it's not clear from this record why the prosecutor, and I think the evidence is clear that the decision was made by the United States Attorney's Office. They're the prosecuting authority. There's no evidence that the district, these defendants lobbied for this prosecution. But I think a critical piece of evidence, at least in my mind, and I would submit to the court, is that at least 15 seconds passed before these three officials observed Officer Moby lunge at and assault inmate Brown. And I think that undermines any self-defense claim. So whatever contrary evidence in the record, and by contrary I mean evidence that could substantiate a self-defense claim, I think on balance the U.S. Attorney's Office felt it was appropriate to go forward with the prosecution.
What do we know that the U.S. Attorney had and from whom? What do we know about what the U.S. Attorney had and from whom?
I don't think the record really shows anything as to what the U.S. Attorney had or from whom. We know that the U.S. Attorney made a decision to prosecute. I think that's all this record really shows.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Did Mr. Hannon have any time left? You can take 2 minutes.
3 points. Your Honor, in the record is all of the documents that the U.S. Attorney turned over to the defense lawyer in Mr. Moby's case, and the fabricated interview was not among them. And the court would certainly know that the U.S. Attorney, the misdemeanor assistant, may have not even spoken to Mr. Brown before he took the stand, certainly would have inquired whether he made a statement to anyone. He probably said, I don't remember, I didn't make a statement to anyone, but the people with the Department of Corrections didn't give that statement to them. Judge Tatel, with respect to your questioning about the hearing officer, in our SIR reply, we cite to the D.C. Court of Appeals case of Charles Watts versus the Department of Corrections, which the government acknowledges states the law that Director Brown could not change the recommended penalty, even though he could remand. He could remand, but he can't change the first penalty, and that's the law. And suggesting, as Judge Motz does, that Director Brown might not have known that at the time is conflicting with the advice of his own lawyer. And Judge Brown, the day before the arbitration hearing, the District of Columbia's lawyer told Director Brown, don't prosecute this case because of the evidence that we have that indicates that Corporal Moby is innocent.
Thank you.
That's where in the record?
Sorry.
That is the memorandum that Rapunzel Johnson prepared on October 11th of 2008, I believe, which was disclosed during the course of the discovery in this case. That was the memorandum that was the subject of litigation before Judge Faccioli, who wrote an opinion saying that it was otherwise privileged but had been disclosed.
Okay. Thank you. Case is submitted.